Test for English Majors 2006, Grade 8. Part 1, Listening Comprehension. Section A, Mini Lecture. In this section you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task after the mini-lecture. When the lecture is over, you will be given 2 minutes to check your notes, and another 10 minutes to complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini-lecture.
Good morning. In today's lecture, we shall discuss what meaning is in literary works. When we read novels, poems, etc., we invariably ask ourselves a question. That is, what does the writer mean here? In other words, we are interested in finding out the meaning. But meaning is a difficult issue in literature. How do we know what a work of literature is supposed to mean, or what its real meaning is? I'd like to discuss 3 ways to explain what meaning is. Number 1, meaning is what is intended by the author. Number 2, meaning is created by and contained in the text itself. And number 3, meaning is created by the reader. Now, let's take a look at the first approach, that is, meaning is what is intended by the author. Does a work of literature mean what the author intended it to mean? And if so, how can we tell? If all the evidence we have is the text itself and nothing else, we can only guess what ideas the author had according to our understanding of literature and the world. In order to have a better idea of what one particular author means in one of his works, I'd suggest that you do the following. First, go to the library and read other works by the same author. Second, get to know something about what sort of meanings seem to be common in literary works in that particular tradition and at that time. In other words, we need to find out what the literary trends were in those days. And last, get to know what were the cultural values and symbols of the time. I guess you can understand the author's meaning much more clearly after you do the related background research. Now, let's move on to the second approach to meaning, that is, meaning is created by and contained in the text itself. Does the meaning exist in the text? Some scholars argue that the formal properties of the text, like grammar, diction, uses of image, and so on and so forth, contain and produce the meaning, so that any educated or competent reader will inevitably come to more or less the same interpretation as any other. As far as I am concerned, the meaning is not only to be found in the literary traditions and grammatical conventions of meaning, but also in the cultural codes which have been handed down from generation to generation. So when we and other readers, including the author as well, are said to come up with similar interpretations, that kind of agreement could be created by common traditions and conventions of usage, practice, and interpretation. In other words, we have some kind of shared basis for the same interpretation. But that does not mean that readers agree on the meaning all the time. In different time periods, with different cultural perspectives, including class, belief, and worldview, readers, I mean competent readers, can arrive at different interpretations of texts. So, meaning in the text is determined by how readers see it. It is not contained in the text in a fixed way. Now, the third approach to meaning, that is, meaning is created by the reader. Does the meaning then exist in the reader's response? In a sense, this is inescapable. Meaning exists only insofar as it means to someone, and literary works are written in order to evoke sets of responses in the reader. This leads us to consider three essential issues. The first is, meaning is social, that is, language and conventions work only as shared meaning, and our way of viewing the world can exist only as shared or shareable. Similarly, when we read a text, we are participating in social or cultural meaning. So, response to a piece of literary work is not merely an individual thing, but is part of culture and history. Second, meaning is contextual. If you change the context, you often change the meaning. And last, meaning requires reader competency. Texts constructed as literature have their own ways of expressions, or sometimes we say styles. And the more we know of them, the more we can understand the text. Consequently, there is, in regard to the question of meaning, the matter of reader competency, as it is called, the experience and knowledge of comprehending literary texts. Your professors might insist that you practice and improve competency in reading, and they might also insist that you interpret meaning in the context of the whole work. But you may have to learn other competencies too. For instance, in reading Mulk Raj Anand's The Untouchables, you might have to learn what the social structure of India was like at that time, what traditions of writing were in practice in India in the early 1930s, what political, cultural, and personal influences Mulk Raj Anand came under when constructing the imaginative world of this short novel. Okay. You may see that this idea that meaning requires competency in reading, in fact, brings us back to the historically situated understandings of an author and his works, as we mentioned earlier in this lecture, to different conventions and ways of reading and writing, and to the point that meaning requires a negotiation between cultural meanings across time, culture, class, etc. As readers, you have in fact acquired a good deal of competency already, but you should acquire more. The essential point of this lecture is that meaning in literature is a phenomenon that is not easily located, that meaning is historical, social, and derived from the traditions of reading and thinking and understanding of the world that you are educated about. Thank you for your attention.
Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes and then please complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes. Section B. Interview. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully, and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your colored answer sheet. Questions 1 to 5 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now, listen to the interview. Well, I see from your resume, Miss Green, that you studied at University College. How did you find it there?
I had a great time. The teaching there was good, and I made a lot of friends. The psychology department was a great place to be.
How come you chose psychology?
Well, at first I didn't have any clear idea of what I wanted to do after university. I guess I've just always been interested in people and the way they act. I wanted to know why people think and act the way they do. It's a fascinating area.
And what was the course like?
Good. The teachers were all really nice, and they had this special approach to teaching. You know, they didn't just give us lectures and tell us to read books like they might do in some more traditional places. The whole course was based on a problem-solving approach. You know, they'd describe a particular situation to us, and we'd discuss what might happen. And after that, we'd do some reading and see if it confirmed our own ideas. That's what I liked best, the really practical orientation of the course. I learned very well with that style, so for me it was just great.
I see from your resume that you graduated about 4 years ago, and after that, let me see...
I got a job with the Department of Employment. It was only a temporary thing for about 5 months. I was a researcher in the department. We'd design a survey, go out to the factories, and ask all the questions to the workers and the management, then go back to the office, analyze all the data, and produce a report. It was quite interesting. And I guess the psychology course at college helped me a lot.
And after that, you worked for 3 years in an advertising agency. That must have been a bit of change from the Department of Employment, wasn't it?
Well, not really. I suppose the office furnishings were a bit more sophisticated, but the work was quite similar. I was basically still doing the same thing, designing questionnaires, going out, asking questions and writing reports. The only difference was that this time I wasn't asking people about their work. I was asking them what kind of shampoo they'd bought and if they preferred brand X to brand Y. Then I'd make up a report and the agency would use the information in their advertising campaigns. I enjoyed my work a lot.
So why did you decide to leave?
3 years is a long time to be asking people those sort of questions about shampoo and drinks. No, seriously. After 2 years, I was in charge of the research department of the agency, and I had one assistant researcher. I guess after 2 years of doing that, I suppose I felt, you know, I can do this well and now I want to do something else that's a little different. And there was nowhere for me to go inside the company. It just wasn't challenging for me anymore, and because I needed a challenge, I decided to move on. When I heard about the position of senior researcher here, I thought, that's exactly what I want. The chance to combine my management skills and my research interests, working in a much larger department with more varied work.
And you felt that the job description in our advertisement would offer you the kind of challenge you're looking for?
Exactly. Yes. As I said, management in a larger organization and research combined. Also, to be honest with you, I heard about the job before it was advertised. A friend of mine who works here, Mark Austin, told me a few weeks ago that you were looking for someone to take over the job. He described the position to me in quite a bit of detail, and I thought, well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. So really, I'd written my letter of application before the job was even advertised.
I should tell you that with the present cutbacks, we've only got one full-time administrative assistant in the section. How would you feel about doing your own word processing, photocopying, that sort of thing?
Oh, I'm used to that. I've done all my own word processing for ages. It's the only way to write, really, isn't it? I can type well, about 60 words a minute. I did a secretarial course after I left school, so I learned typing and shorthand. Then a few years later, I bought a PC, and I learned how to do word processing, too.
Well, that's handy. Now, in the position you've applied for, you'd have 5 assistant researchers responsible to you. That's considerably more responsibility than you've had before, so you're obviously ambitious, and as you said, you like a challenge. I was wondering what you see yourself doing in, say, 5 or 10 years down the track.
Oh, that's a difficult question. Let me try to answer your question this way. I'm particularly interested in experimental design and also in teaching. I'd like to continue the organization and planning side of research, but do some teaching too. I know that you have lecturers here who do just that sort of thing. Some practical work and some undergraduate and postgraduate teaching. So that's what I'd really be aiming for, to be a lecturer here as well.
Well, that's certainly a career path that we'd encourage you to follow, but of course it might be necessary to upgrade your present qualifications first. I see from your resume that you've enrolled in an MA in experimental psychology. Could you tell me a bit about the courses you're planning to take? Section C, News Broadcast. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your colored answer sheet. Questions 6 and 7 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the 2 questions. Now listen to the news.
A man stole a small aircraft at gunpoint Sunday and flew it over downtown Frankfurt, circling skyscrapers and threatening to crash into the European Central Bank. He landed safely after about 2 hours and was arrested. The man told a television station he wanted to call attention to Judith Resnick, a U.S. astronaut killed in the 1986 post-launch explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger. Military jets chased the stolen, 2-seat motorized glider as the man began circling slowly above Frankfurt's banking district. Thousands of people were evacuated from the main railway station, 2 opera houses, and several skyscrapers. Police identified the man as a 31-year-old German student from Darmstadt, a city about 25 miles south of Frankfurt. In radio contact with air traffic controllers, the man threatened to crash into the European Central Bank headquarters unless he was allowed the TV interview as well as a call to Baltimore. He later said he wanted to commit suicide by plunging the plane into the main river. It was unclear if the man was forced to land or talked down. Air traffic controllers and a police psychologist had been in contact with him. Question 8 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news. Shanghai plans to build a vast underground network of malls, restaurants, and parking lots to make up for a lack of space above ground, according to a recent government report. The development will cover 600,000 square meters, the equivalent of 120 soccer fields, spread across 4 underground floors
the city government reported on its website. The city is accepting bids from builders. Shanghai has about 20 million people, plus factories, office towers, and high-rise apartments, crowded into a small triangular territory near the mouth of the Yangtze River. The plans call for the project, due to be finished by 2006, to expand existing facilities scattered along Shanghai's subway system. The project will need advanced technology to supply fresh air and ensure safety. But the biggest concern is the stability of the soil under the city. Shanghai is sinking by 1.5 centimeters a year. Land subsidence has been aggravated by overpumping of underground water and the construction of thousands of high-rise buildings. Shanghai's foundations are built on soft soil, so building multi-storied spaces underground would be like digging holes in a piece of bean curd, the government report said. The difficulties are easy to see. Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the two questions. Now, listen to the news.
A credit card that only works when it hears its owner's voice has been developed by U.S. scientists. Researchers hope that the device, which comes with a built-in voice recognition chip and microphone, will be a weapon in the battle against credit card fraud. Even if thieves know a card's password and personal identification number, they will still have to copy the owner's voice accurately. The trial card was created by scientists at B-Card in California, U.S. The first version is 3 times as thick as a normal credit card, but researchers believe smaller chips will allow the card to slim down to a more conventional size. The card is apparently the first to put a voice recognition chip, a microphone, speaker, and battery into a credit card. To use the card, the owner first presses a button and hears the prompt, "Say your password." If the password is correct and spoken by the right person, the card emits an identification signal which is processed by a computer connected to the Internet. Researchers hope to get the card to handle 10 transactions per day for 2 years before its non-replaceable battery runs out.
This is the end of listening comprehension.